Our next speaker is Rabbi David Mintz, who has recently joined the OU. He is the rabbinic coordinator of OU Psak and Policy, which means that the OU has a number of poskim, Rabbi Yisrael Belsky, Rabbi Herschel Schachter, Rabbi Menachem Ganak, and it is the job of Rabbi Mintz to record the psukim of these various poskim. It's on computer. Somebody wants to get a certain psuk on any topic, within a few seconds, Rabbi Mintz can literally make a search and bring all those documents for anyone's need. So we used to have Rabbi David Cohn, who went over to the CRC in Chicago. He moved to Chicago. He was with us for 7-8 years. And we're very fortunate to have in his place now Rabbi David Mintz, who has made a mark already, and he's a big Talmud Chacham and a tremendous Baal Midos. It's a great pleasure for me to introduce Rabbi David Mintz, who will speak about products and medications for Pesach.
Thank you, Rabbi Grossman. As Rabbi Perlmutter discussed, Pesach is a holiday that requires a lot of preparation. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Psachim that, and it's really the first halacha that's discussed in Hilchos Pesach, Shloshim Yom Kodim Lachag. 30 days before Pesach, we already start discussing and thinking and preparing and analyzing the laws of Pesach. There are so many intricate halachos when it comes to the halachos of the Seder, of matzah, and of maror, and of cleaning, of chametz, of kashering, as Rabbi Perlmutter demonstrated for us, that it really takes time and a person has to think out what's going to happen for at least, you know, for a few weeks or a month before Pesach to make sure that he's ready and he's familiar with the halachos so he'll be ready when the holiday comes. All mitzvahs we know require some preparation, but Pesach requires a higher level of preparation, a little more work, a little more thinking about it. And in most homes, this is something that takes place, you know, Purim time. I remember growing up, and my mother always would, when Purim came, it would be the time we have to start cleaning up the rooms and no eating, you know, cookies in certain rooms. And every week, another room was already designated as clean for Pesach. And that was always the spirit of that month. The month before Pesach was that of getting ready for Pesach. However, in the OU and in other kashrus organizations, Pesach is not only on our mind starting from Purim time, but it's really on our mind focusing from the summertime and really throughout the year. The matzos are baked, you know, many months before already in the end of the summer. Most of the matzah baking begins and it continues almost until Pesach. But really all year long, there are products that are requested. There are enzymes, emulsifiers, and flavor components that companies require for Pesach certification. And all year long, these are prepared with special Pesach supervision so that they'll be available for the consumers to be used in Pesach products. I'd like to discuss some of the guidelines concerning some interesting food products require special Pesach supervision, as well as some of the guidelines that the poskim at the OU have set up in terms of recommendations for medications and some inedible objects when it comes to having them around on Pesach. I must stress that many of these items are a matter of machlokes, of much debate. You know, different communities, different rabbanim recommend different practices to their congregants of what kind of things they should stay away from on Pesach, what kind of things they should avoid, what's permitted, what's not. What I'll present is the opinion that the OU recommends to those who ask, and everyone should decide based on their own rabbanim and their experience how they should follow. Before we get into the details, I'd like to begin with just a little bit of a basic background of what chametz and what really is forbidden to be in on Pesach. The Torah tells us, we actually read it yesterday in the reading of Parshas HaChodesh, that on for 7 days of Pesach, in outside of Eretz Yisrael, we have 8 days, that one cannot eat chametz. And the Gemara tells us that chametz is defined as the 5 grains, wheat, barley, spelt, oat, and rye, which come in contact with water and stay that way for a number of minutes. It's approximately 18 minutes, approximately. And that is something called, after that, at that time, is something called chimutz, of leavening takes place. And that's, we know that when you let flour and water sit, the eventually it's going to have a special texture to it, and the dough will rise. For all those who have baked bread, they'll know the special nature and the special qualities that exist when preparing a dough in that way. And the Torah tells us that there are 2 prohibitions when it comes to chametz on Pesach. Number 1, of course, we can't eat any chametz on Pesach. And number 2, that we cannot own any chametz on Pesach as well. This is what's called an isra achila, not eating, and an isra of bal yira and bal yimotze, not to be found in the home throughout the holiday of Pesach whatsoever. And it's for that reason that not only do we have to be careful about what we eat on Pesach, but we're so scrupulous about cleaning for Pesach, so that everything should be, we should not have any chametz over Pesach. If you cannot, own it. If you own the gasoline, you can't. Chametz is aser b'hana, yeah.
So there's a high ethanol content to the gasoline.
So that
would, that's being produced now in the United States. Would that be?
I mean, ethanol is not an edible. As we'll talk later, it's not something that.
Byproduct of right.
There's no Isra Hana from Kinyos. We'll get to that now, right? But Chametz is Asr Bahana. You can't own it. You can't get any pleasure from it. But as we'll see later, I don't think things that are not edible are not necessarily included in the prohibition. So these halachos apply when it comes to things that are purely Chametz: bread, cakes, cookies, noodles, crackers, everything that we know that we can't eat on Pesach. As well as mixtures that contain chametz. And in fact, if a product was prepared before Pesach and it has a 1/60th of it is chametz, so that cannot be kept on Pesach, and one must destroy that before the holiday of Pesach begins. And in fact, when the holiday of Pesach does begin, it's even more strict that even any minute amount of chametz which is mixed in, if I accidentally a drop of flour fell into a food product on Pesach, so the whole thing is forbidden on Pesach because of the strictness of the halachos of chametz on Pesach itself. So those are the halachos, the basic halachos of chametz, the 5 grains, the prohibition of eating it, and the prohibition of owning and getting any pleasure from chametz on Pesach. Besides that, we know we're familiar with the minhag that Ashkenazim have of not eating kidneys on Pesach. Kidneys, literally defined as legumes, as beans, and we'll see in a moment what else it may be included, is a custom that Ashkenazim have not to eat on Pesach. And this is a very ancient tradition that the Ashkenazim have already. It's found in the Smak. And the Maharil, who is known as the father of many of the Ashkenazic traditions, was very stringent and very forceful about enforcing this minhag of not eating the kidneys, of not eating these beans. And the Achronim, the Poskim, give 2 reasons for this prohibition. One, because it looks like chametz, it looks like the 5 grains, it's harvested and it's ground into flour in a manner very similar to the other grains, and it's very easy for people to have corn flour and see or other type of bean flour and look at it and say that's just like the wheat flour and come to eat the wheat and other products of the like as well. So therefore the rabbis felt that we should stay away from these types of products which are very similar to real chametz products. In addition, another reason given is because they are often grown next to or produced in places very close proximity to the other grains. And therefore, there is a very strong likelihood that there will be some chametz mixed in with the corn or beans because they're grown together. So they'll be mixed together when the wind blows a little bit and when the flour is ground together. So since they're so close together, we try to stay away from these other beans as well. What are some of the famous examples? We all know corn, kasha, peas, green beans. All the like we know we stay away from throughout the holiday of Pesach. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked an interesting question. What about peanuts? He says peanuts could be made into a flour. What are they permissible or not on Pesach? He says, at the time when the minhag was established, peanuts did not exist. So how should we treat peanuts from now on? Should we say that it's similar to the other items of kitnios or not? And Rav Moshe says that even though you're right, it's similar to kitnios and it could be confused with the other grains, nevertheless, he says, since it did not exist at the time of the minhag, we do not have to add anything else on, and strictly speaking, peanuts are permissible to be eaten, maybe eaten on Pesach. However, he says, if the minhag develops, and as it has been tradition that people do not eat peanuts, so then we have to keep that tradition as well. However, until that happens, really strictly speaking, there was no prohibition to eat peanuts throughout the holiday of Pesach. In modern times, people have come up with new questions. Very recently, the OU has been asked about quinoa, which is a new type of grain, which is also has similarities to wheat and barley, and is used as a substitute for those who cannot eat such foods. And different poskim have given different responses. Some say it was not included in the original minhag, and therefore we may eat it. But others say, since it's so similar, we cannot eat those that on Pesach because really it can be confused with the other types of grain as well. The OU has taken the position to not to certify quinoa on Pesach because of this concern. Two other points of interest regarding kitniyot. Number one is that it's only a prohibition to eat it, not to own it, not to get any benefit from it. And number two is that young children or people who are ill and there's a need for them to eat medications or products that contain kitniyot may do so on Pesach. Now that with this basic introduction...
Is there any problem to eat in the home of people who do that if you don't eat it specifically?
That's a very good question. The question is, may a person who's Ashkenazi background, who refrains from eating kitniyot on Pesach, may he eat that as someone who's Sephardi, who does eat kitniyot. Obviously, he's not going to eat the kitniyot himself, but, you know, first they cooked the rice in their pots, and then they cooked potatoes and meat and chicken in the same utensils in the same plates. And the answer is that most poskim assume that it is permissible to use to eat in the home as long as they are obviously the dishes and the utensils are clean and there's no residue left over. But since the halacha is unlike chametz that kitniyot is batel berov, as long as it's most of the food that you're eating is not kitniyot, and even if there's a small amount of flavor left over inside the pot which has kitniyot flavor to it, it's going to be permissible because it's going to be batel in the rest of the food that's cooked in that pot.
Not acceptable,
correct.
It didn't fit into the parameters that you said because it wasn't there in the beginning.
Correct. Even though it wasn't there, so we're not working with that tradition of Rav Moshe Feinstein. That Rav Moshe Feinstein had that psak, that if it wasn't there, so it should not apply. But others felt, for example, corn, which did not exist at the time of the Gzera, at the time of the original time of kitniyot was enacted, and yet it's been no Ashkenazim that I know eat corn. So we have a tradition of such things as well. Yes.
Are you saying according to what you believe Moshe's interpretation would be, Kimmel would be okay?
The simple reading of this tshuva was that it should be okay.
Okay. Are you able to tell me who said it's okay? Which? Are you allowed to say that?
I'm sorry?
Are you allowed to tell me
which organizations?
What?
Which organizations? I believe the Star K and other Rabbanim. You can look on the internet. You could search for it. You could find. I've
so.
Q U I N O A.
Q U I N.
I N.
Q U I N O A.
Thank you.
You're saying by that definition, since you don't accept Bokhikwanstein on quinoa, you don't accept it on peanuts as well?
Correct. Peanuts are not accepted. They are assumed to be kidneys. Correct.
What about spelt?
Spelt is one of the five grains. It is really chametz, from according to the Torah. Now that we have that basic introduction to some of the products, the basic halachos of Pesach, maybe we'll look for a few minutes into some of the details in food production that where some of these issues could come up. One of the Rabbanim in the OU once told me that he once found in a plant that he was visiting water that was technically chametz. You would think water is something, you know, it's the most innocuous ingredient. What could be wrong with water? He said that in the plant that he was visiting, they were cooking a wheat starch in water, and then they were evaporating, and the water was being caught, recondensed, and that water was pure H2O, was pure water, but it was cooked with chametz. So in that plant, they were then going to go ahead and use that water in a future production, which I think they hadn't, before he caught it, they were going to use that for a Pesach product. And then he said, one second, this is real, this water is real chametz. So even the most simplest of ingredients can at times be found to have questions of chametz. And at the same time, the most complex ingredients must be analyzed very carefully as well. You know, food scientists, food chemists have a great technology, especially when it comes to the fermentation industry, where they're able, with using microorganisms, with enzymes, to change something into a totally different product. You know, we know that wine turns into vinegar, or dough will turn into yeast eventually when it sits for long enough based on the microorganisms. So the chemists are able to figure out where the right microorganisms are to cause certain changes to make the product that they desire. So for example, the U.S. produces a tremendous amount of corn every year. We have much more corn than we could ever eat and feed to the animals. So because there's such an abundance of corn, they had to think of something, discover another way to use corn. So one way is that they take regular plain, you know, plain tasting corn, and they turn that into corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, something very sweet, and it's used as sweetener throughout the food industry. It's very plentiful in America. And then, when they've too much of that, they change that into other chemicals, to ascorbic acid, to xanthan gum, which are used in food productions as binders, as paste, as flavor enhancers. All these things that come out through the fermentation industry with the use of microorganisms and enzymes. And the question is, how does the halacha view this process? When you start out with something, let's say you start out with chametz, or you start out with kidneys, and you take that and you change that into something else, how is that viewed? And the source for this discussion, this halacha, is in very interesting. It's not anywhere in Hilchos Pesach. It's not where in Shulchan Aruch, in Yoredeya. It's in the Shulchan Aruch, in Aruch Chaim, in Hilchos Brachos. When it's talking about what the brachos you make on different smells. And the Shulchan Aruch discusses something called musk. Musk is an excretion of the abdomen of a deer. And apparently it was produced by the blood that was caught inside the abdominal tract. And after it sat inside the abdomen for a while, it would have a pleasant aroma. And it was people enjoyed the smell. So there's a discussion in the Shulchan Aruch what bracha to make when you smell that. We know maybe people want to use it for Havdalah or for some other time they smell it. So what bracha do you make? So in that discussion, the Shulchan Aruch, the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch raised the question, may one eat such a product? It began as blood, and now it's something which is totally different, and it has a very unpleasant aroma. It doesn't look, smell, or taste like it began. And this is a major machlokes in the Rishonim. The Magen Avraham quotes the machlokes, the Rush and the Ra'ah, and the Mishnah Brura quotes that the practice is that when it comes to Isurim Doraisa, things that are forbidden according to the Torah, we have to be machmir, that if it began as chametz or began as blood, we cannot eat it. But if it's an Isur Derabanan and it changed to something very different, so then it can be accepted. So this has great relevance for us when it comes to Pesach. Because when talking about chametz, that's something which is forbidden mida oraisa. And if you would change wheat starch and cause that to ferment and become turn into citric acid, so that even though it changed greatly, it would remain forbidden. However, if you would take a cornstarch, and which is only kidneys, which is only a minhag, and turn that into citric acid to some other product, so that would be acceptable, since kidneys it's only a minhag. It's not even a real strong Isra Drabanon. It's only a custom. And therefore, we can accept a product which, even though it began as corn, it began as kidneys, but now it has changed so dramatically that it can be acceptable for Pesach production. And in fact, this is very common in many, many different food products that are certified for Pesach. One of the most common examples is Diet Coke. Diet Coke is sweetened by aspartame, which really comes, it's really began as corn, and then they turn it again into corn syrup, and from that it's converted through these enzymes, through the microorganisms, into aspartame. So since, based on our explanation, since kidneys is only a minhag, therefore can be accepted for Pesach productions, and therefore we do have Diet Coke, which has an OUP, and it's using such sweeteners that really came originally from corn. And it's not only in the corn, in the sodas, it's in salad dressings and ice creams and whatever you could think of, in wines and hot dogs, everything you could think of, there's some enzyme that very often they came from a kidney source. And it's important for people who are involved in kashrus to be aware of this, because you could have the same citric acid, the same product, which could come from chametz, which would be forbidden, or it could come from kidneys. So people who have to keep a very open eye for these things when giving a hashgacha, that it should be the one which came only from kidneys, and that will be permissible. I'd like to now move on to discuss for a few moments some of the halachos and guidelines regarding medications on Pesach. I have with me a few copies. The OU has put out in the Pesach guide some of what the postgame with Rabbi Ganak and Rav Belsky and Rav Schechter have come up with in terms of what to advise people regarding medications on Pesach. As we've seen, chametz could come in all shapes, forms and sizes. And yes, there are medications that have chametz in them. So how are we to view those on Pesach? We said that you cannot eat chametz on Pesach, you cannot own. So how does that apply to these medications? So firstly, the most important thing to point out is that if we're dealing with someone, a chole sheyesh bo sakana, someone who is, you know, his life is in danger, or even a suffik, or even if it's, you know, it's only a doubt, his life may be in danger, so then everything is permissible. There's no, the Torah put no restrictions when a person's life is in danger. We're talking here about someone who is a cholish embo sakana, somebody who is, you know, he's not feeling well, he has an illness, but if he doesn't take the medication, he'll be okay. It'll just take him a few more days till it gets better, or he'll suffer with a bad headache or something of the like. May he take certain medications on Pesach. So, the basic rule that the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, when it comes to not only Pesach, but when it comes to all prohibitions, is that anything which became inedible no longer retained the prohibition. So the Talmud is talking about if you have a piece of meat that really came from a non-kosher animal, and it got so rotten that it's no longer edible, so that's something that's permissible to be eaten. There is one... It's no longer edible, so it's no longer eaten as a food. But if someone decides to eat it, when I say it's no longer edible, I mean it's no longer viewed as a piece of meat that people want to eat. But if someone decides to eat it, so, you know, Gesunte Hayti's, he can do so, but it's not going to be prohibited. The question is, how does something become inedible? So there is a minority opinion that assumes that in order for something to become inedible, it has to become rotten, like a piece of meat. If it sits out for long enough, it'll become rotten. And if a person, you know, pours enough bad, foul-tasting things onto it until it becomes inedible, that doesn't make it inedible and it's still prohibited. However, the majority opinion in Achronim... For example, yes. The majority opinion in Achronim is that if a person takes something that's prohibited and he mixes it and into a way that now it's no longer edible, like most of our pills are, even if they do contain chametz, but they're so... No one really eats pills. People swallow them, and if they try to chew them, they don't taste very good at all. So they're so bad tasting that this definitely falls into the category, according to most opinions, as something that's no longer edible, and therefore it is permissible to eat them, to ingest them on Pesach. And this will include all pills and creams and injections which people use on Pesach, that since they're, clearly no one eats them, no one cares for them, one may eat them, one may own them, one may eat them when need be on Pesach. The question that arises is that when it comes to flavored or chewable medications, which really have a very, to some people at least, they have a very pleasant flavor and a very pleasant taste. Some of the same flavorings that are used in candies and food productions are used in these medications as well, especially children's medications, in order to convince them to take their medicines. They'll often be flavored and have a very pleasant taste. And at the same time, they'll have often chametz products inside of the medications. So this is something that presents a serious problem for people that observe Pesach and need such products over Pesach. And really, every person should consult their rav in terms of the specific instance, in terms of the necessity, and in terms of the product, if it could be determined that in fact it is chametz free, or if a chametz free alternative is available. If it's inedible.
So what's the difference if it is edible? It's not because of the chametz it's from the other.
But the whole product is now edible. When it becomes inedible, let's say a pill which people swallow which is inedible, it's not necessarily inedible because of the chametz. It could be the chametz could be just a plain starch, some alcohol which is not necessarily inedible, but all the other ingredients together make the pill inedible. So if you add something to it that makes it edible, so then...
I can say the other things that you add to this chametz, which is you can eat it, if you can mix it and you get something bad, then it's fine.
Right. Yes.
What if the pill doesn't quite equal something that's medicine to make you better? For example, we have a couple of things we take, like lactate pills,
mm-hmm.
because we're lactose intolerant. Of course, we don't have to take it, we just don't drink milk otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Or vitamin D pills with calcium added,
right.
which we don't have to take, something that's good for us, that we take on a daily basis. Is there a more stringency on this because it's not something to make you feel better, or how do these things...
That's an excellent question, and that's a very big machlokas amongst the poskim how to view something which is almost like a food supplement. Is that considered to be? Let me back up for a moment. The Shulchan Aruch says that if you have a piece of chametz which is burnt and really not edible, but you decide that it's not edible for most people, but you like it and you decide that you want to eat it, to you it's very tasty. So there's a concept called achshave, that you gave it importance and you, to you, it is edible. So since to you it's something that tastes good and you like it, so now it becomes something important, and it is forbidden to eat that on Pesach. So when discussing medications, so no one really eats medications because they like the medications or they want this specifically. They're eating it because they have no choice. In order for them to be healthy, to feel good, so they take these medications. But when we're talking about vitamin or a food supplement, so then there's a big machlokes to which category to put that into. Is that really like a medicine? Because you don't really want it. It's not something that you enjoy. You don't get, like you eat a piece of cake, you're not enjoying the vitamin, but at the same time, you're eating it for the nutrients that exist in regular food, or the lactate, the chemicals that exist there to help you digest the food. Perhaps that's just a food supplement and it's gonna be more stringent. So, they quote in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein that he felt that it's prohibited. Because it's like a food, and others are more lenient. So that's something that a person should consult their rav about.
So what you're saying is aspirin can be eaten. It's not chametz, but if it's coated, you can't eat it. If it makes it
tasty.
Right.
Does aspirin taste good?
No, I'm just saying if it's coated, it may taste
good. If it tastes good, so then it would be in this discussion, correct?
You don't swallow.
Right.
If you
So if you swallow it, right.
So
if it doesn't taste good, so then no one eats it, so then it's permissible. Right.
So they give you this list, they have this list that they put out of which medications you can eat, which medications you can't. Usually those are only brand names, and then you have generics. So am I inferring correctly from what you said that on the Pesach of at least the OU, that since normally wouldn't eat medicine, it doesn't taste good, etc.,
etc.,
that you can pay through generic medicine, even though it's not on one of them.
That's correct. Tablets, inedible medicines, right.
Every year there comes out Blumenkranz directory. Now, my question is, are there differences between Blumenkranz book and the OU list?
Yes.
Especially on medicine.
The OU assumes that all medications that are listed in these lists are permissible, or most of the medications that are not flavored. And you don't have to trust me. I have a copy of the guidelines that have been printed and
give it out.
Yeah, that's the OU. The OU doesn't print lists of medications. The OU says that if the medicine is not flavored and not tasty, all medications are permissible.
Did you look into the book of Blumenkranz?
I have seen it, yes.
Are there differences?
He's working with a more strict approach. Those lists are working with the approach that even though the pill itself isn't edible, but since the chametz inside the pill may be edible, if you could somehow pull that out, so it remains prohibited. Right. The OU is working with the approach that since the pill as a whole is inedible, so then we view it as something inedible and permissible. Right. It's not up to us, right. Correct. Right, correct. Yes.
You have been talking about pills that one swallows. The same thing applies to prescription medicine that comes in a capsule.
Those don't have any flavoring, so they would be also permissible. Correct.
One more question, we have a couple more.
Okay. Yes. Let me.
Perfect.
since we're running out of time, we're gonna get your question. We'll let him just finish his presentation. That will get your question.
I just want to discuss one more related topic, and that is with baby formulas and other nutritional supplements, which young children and elderly people often need. And most of these are not certified for Pesach, the reason being because they contain kidneyos. Much of it is corn and other kidneyos based. However, at times, there are chametz ingredients that could be found inside them as well. And for that reason, it's very important for a person to consult the company that gives the hashgacha to figure out, since these children and elderly people may eat kidneyos, so if it's only pure kidneyos, so all these supplements and formulas are permissible. However, at times they also have chametz added. So it's never going to be labeled kosher for Pesach because it's kidneyos. So most kosher organizations don't certify food for Pesach, don't certify kidneyos for Pesach. However, if one looks into it, and the OU has printed different lists of brand names that we assume are permissible for cholim uzkenim, for sick and young or old people, because they are chametz free and they only have kidneys. One last point to everyone, it's important to keep in mind, is that since food production is so complicated, so you know the same food product, which used to be only made, like coffee was only made on coffee equipment, and you know, and crackers are made on cracker equipment. If you go into plants companies now, everything is interchangeable. So we can't just assume that because something is like coffee, is such a simple product, that it's chametz free, because there are instances when coffee was made on equipment that had chametz, or it was added maltodextrin or other ingredients which could be chametz. So one must be very careful with all products which could have chametz perhaps added to it, so that they should make sure that it's truly chametz free. Well, perfumes, I don't know if that's a discussion. I don't know if they're edible or inedible. They probably don't taste like very much. If they're toothpaste also is it on the list here? I don't know
no,
if it's.
It's not on the list, though.
You could ask Rabbi Ganak to render a decision about toothpaste.
So it is. I mean, if it's not on this list, it means it's
inedible. Also, so anything inedible that the people.
But it
don't
has
eat.
A flavor, like no.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Mintz. Very interesting presentation.